You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
You recently went to your neighborhood big box store, and they were touting the fact that you could purchase your pet's medication at drastically discounted prices. So why is your veterinarian charging so much for the same item? Are they really concerned about keeping your pet healthy, or are they just in it for the money? And why are they always recommending that once or twice a year you bring your pet in for a wellness examination? It looks just fine. And teeth cleaning. Give me a break. You've owned pets for years and never had a prophy. Animals in the wild, they never get their teeth cleaned. My guest is Dr. Ted Cohen. He's the current president of the American Veterinary Medical Association. In the next 30 minutes, we're going to discuss the cost of caring. We'll also investigate how veterinarians attend to the health of animals, people, and the environment, along with the specialization that's occurred in veterinary medicine over the past several decades. So sit, stay. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
It's DesignerPetSweaters.com. Hand-knitted designer sweaters for your precious pup or cool cat. Beautiful couture patterns for your pets, including custom-knitted formal wear, casual wear, yachting, and even sports-themed. Many designer pet sweaters include feathered tammy hats, top hats, and a lot of sparkle. Each sweater includes leg loops, front paw sleeves, and leash opening. Visit DesignerPetSweaters.com to order your four-legged fashions today. Large or small, we fit them all. DesignerPetSweaters.com.
Pet Life Radio, the number one pet radio network on the planet, joins forces with iHeartRadio to put the power of your pets in your pocket.
Awesome.
Download the iHeartRadio app and rock Pet Life Radio on your phone, on your tablet, on your Xbox, in your car. Pet talk, pet tunes, and fun pet times. Pet Life Radio and iHeartRadio. Positively possum.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Cohen, thank you so much for being with us today. And number one, congratulations on your presidency. I know you're bringing a lot to this organization.
Well, you're very kind to say so, Bernadine. And let me tell you how much a pleasure it is to be able to do this show with you today.
Well, before we get into it, tell us a little bit about your background. How did you become a veterinarian? Is it something that you said, you know, from a kid, oh, I always wanted to become a veterinarian?
Actually not. My path to being a veterinarian is probably a little different than the vast majority of veterinarians out there today. I actually was in graduate school in a medical school after following my undergraduate education. And one of the jobs that I had during that part of my education was one of my jobs as far as receiving that education was to help run physiology and pharmacology labs for physician students. And during that course, I really did not like how the animals were being treated. And remember, this was 45 years ago, so things have improved significantly since then. But at that time, I did not like the way the animals were being treated, and I decided I had to do something to help animals and not just sit here and hurt them potentially. So that's when I decided to become a veterinarian.
And I understand you went to Tuskegee.
I did. I am a Tuskegee graduate. I am honored to be the very first American Veterinary Medical Association president from Tuskegee, and I represent that school with all the honor and pride that I can.
And somehow you went from Tuskegee to Colorado and showing that, yes, besides being companion animal medicine, I understand that you also do work at the Denver Zoo. That must be exciting. I worked for a short amount of time. LA Zoo, great.
I do not work at the zoo anymore. I did that much earlier in my career. I was the veterinarian on call at the Denver Zoo for about 5 years, and still do a moderate amount of exotic animal work in my practice. And for me, that's just kind of more of the fun of practice. It gives you more variety. You're not seeing the same cases day in, day out by any means when you're seeing exotic cases. And it's an area of practice, I think, that really, really puts you in touch with the pet owner, because so much of what is going wrong, unfortunately, with an exotic pet has to do with how they're being fed and how they're being housed. And so this gives me a lot to talk about with owners that probably should have been better educated in the first place many times.
So very definitely true. Speaking of some truisms, a lot of people don't really know who the AVMA is, and you being the president, give us a quick little overview of who you represent and the importance of the AVMA.
Well, the AVMA is a professional trade organization, and we represent 86,500 practicing and veterinarians. And when I say practicing, that means practicing in private practice as well as government service, armed forces, teaching, and many, many other areas. In fact, all areas that veterinarians are associated with. There are approximately 100,000 veterinarians in this country, so we represent well over 80% of that group. We try to take their concerns to Congress and advocate on their behalf. We try to ensure that educational standards are upheld, and we provide guidance as far as ethical issues. We do all of that and much, 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 much more.
86,000 sounds like quite a few veterinarians out there practicing in all these various arenas. If you could kind of give us an idea of how many lawyers, if you know the numbers, how many lawyers are out practicing and how many MDs there are out there, physicians?
Well, there's several million MDs, but I'll tell you my favorite comparison for lawyers is, as I said, there's about 100,000 veterinarians in this entire country doing all sorts of jobs. There's more lawyers than that in Washington, D.C. That doesn't give you some concern. It really should.
Wow, didn't realize those numbers. Speaking of some other numbers and stats, it was a couple of months ago, you had a very interesting retort to an article that came out in the Indianapolis Star and Reuters. And I think it really feeds back into the fact that, yes, you were studying pharmacology, and they were talking about pet medications and their safety, and wondering, were these medications really very safe? Were they effective? If you could first kind of go into that maybe a little bit.
You know, pet medications are no different than human medications in regard of having side effects. Essentially, everything has some type of potential side effect. Pet medications have no more nor no less, no fewer side effects potentially than any other drug. Side effects, unfortunately, are a part of the treatment. Not all people, not all animals react the same way. Dosages may need to be tailored more individually. Some animals, some people just do not react well to a certain drug. That's why there are such a variety of drugs on the market. For instance, if for the human market, look at the number of pain-relieving products on the market that you can just buy over the counter, which, by the way, please do not give your dog or cat.
Definitely.
The big ones that your veterinarian will have for your pet, and those are the ones that need to be used specifically for pain relief. But there's really no greater problem with animal medications than with any other. And in fact, if you do see a problem with your pet, it's a good idea to go online and contact the FDA. They have an adverse drug reaction hotline, and you can log that in there so that they are indeed aware that your pet was having a problem with that particular medication.
It can be very frustrating, because oftentimes a client will come into my practice and they might have a golden retriever. And they say, oh, yes, well, my breeder has said that golden retrievers cannot have medication X. Or I was looking online and I see that, you know, there's a number of dogs who have died because of a certain medication. And, you know, I'll always try to counsel them that, yes, as you were just saying right now, Dr. Cohn, that any medication can have a possible adverse side effect, but they really are tested and the companies are not out to harm a pet. The testing that goes on, again, because you had that background for a period of time in pharmacology, correct me if I'm wrong, the testing for veterinary medications as well as human medications really are just as stringent.
They are, although there is one, I think, significant difference between human and animal medications, and that is for animal medications, because the market is smaller, because costs are higher, they don't test it on quite as many animals prior to being released. For a clinical trial with a human drug, usually there's quite a few thousand people that have been tested with this drug. With animal products, many times it's 1,000 or so, or sometimes even less. So there is some difference there, and we'd certainly like to see it where they did test more animals, but it's just not economically feasible, I think, for most of these drug companies. I think if we imposed exactly the same standards that are on human drugs as far as numbers, we probably wouldn't have many, if any, products out there, or they would cost 2 to 3 times what they do right now.
Sometimes clients have come in to me and are concerned that they're reading someplace, usually online, that a particular medication that we're using on a pet, oh, they were actually going to try that in human medicine, but it failed FDA testing, so now they're going to use it in pets just so they don't lose money. But oftentimes I tell them that animals, dogs and cats, horses, they're not just people with fur or feathers, that their metabolism is extremely different. Even between dogs and cats, their metabolism can be just so radically different. How do you address that?
I think you're exactly right. Animals are not fuzzy people, and even certain breeds of dogs are different than other breeds. And so you do have to be careful, and that's where education by drug companies of what the products are for and do are so important for veterinarians to understand. Veterinarians also go to continuing education meetings all over the country to learn about these types of drugs, and they're given instruction by clinical pharmacologists and other folks that work in veterinary colleges or research around the country, and that helps us learn what best products and the safest products are for that particular animal.
Dr. Cohn, that's a perfect lead-in. Thank you very much. I know there has been some real backlash in human medicine as well as concerns in veterinary medicine that veterinarians, MDs, are in the pockets of these pharma companies, because I'll go to a seminar, it's sponsored by a particular drug company, and I'm being educated, and oftentimes people say, oh, well, you had dinner on this company, so of course you're going to recommend their products, or the American Veterinary Medical Association that you represent. You know, you're given money by the farm industry, so you have to be in their pocket. Your feelings?
And I think those are very fair questions to ask. I think according to the code of ethics as promulgated by the AVMA, our veterinarians are required to disclose any conflicts of interest if they're speaking or anything of that nature. By the same token, I can't imagine many, if any, veterinarians being influenced by a meal or some baubles such as a pen and a notebook to buy a certain medication. But I think it does behoove the veterinarian to understand who is giving a talk or a lecture and to understand that there certainly could be some bias there. So I think most veterinarians are careful about that. They're conscientious people. They're relatively intelligent people, I think, most of the time. I actually feel very good about that.
And if you could address, all right, I recently went into Walmart and they were showing that you could get certain heartworm medications at Walmart and, you know, is a lot less than what I have to charge. And then I've also had instances where somebody's wanted a written prescription. I'll write it. They'll go to their pharmacist and it's filled incorrectly. They have to come back to me. Give me the whys and wherefores of the cost of veterinary medicine and the cost of medications at a veterinary hospital versus going to someplace like a big box store.
Well, I think a big box store, for first of all, buys such quantities that they frequently can sell medication to the public cheaper than a veterinarian can buy it from the distributor. So, you know, veterinarians, I think, as a small business person, should be entitled to make at least a reasonable profit on medications that they sell. They do more than just simply stock that medication. They are the people that are most educated and aware of how to use that medication, the appropriate dosage, and so forth. And many times, again, those dosages are very individualized for a particular patient. If a patient has multiple disease problems going on at the same time, we may not follow exactly the label recommendations. We may have to alter that. If we go to a human pharmacist, and by the way, I think if you want to purchase your prescription online or from a human pharmacist, you should be able to do that. I think any veterinarian that is asked to write a prescription should certainly be able and should do so for you. Having said that, I don't know of any big box pharmacy chains that employ veterinarians behind the scenes to even advise them as far as how to use these products. And these guys, these folks, these pharmacists are well-intentioned, but they don't have the education to be able to deal with this.
You're exactly right. I've had a couple of pharmacists call me going, "I'm sorry, doctor, you must have written this particular medication incorrectly because here it's a medication for a thyroid, an underactive thyroid condition in a dog, and you've written it at what's really would be like 10 times normal for a person," going, "Well, thank you very much for bringing that to my attention, but a dog is not a person, and yes, this is the correct dose." So there, as I understand, most pharmacists are not trained in veterinary pharmacology, which can be so different.
I don't think any human pharmacists are trained in veterinary pharmacology. And by the way, I've had exactly the same situation occur with thyroid medication in human pharmacies, and that's happened several times over the years. And so we always, if we write a prescription, we warn the owner and actually request them to please bring the bottle of medication that they received from the pharmacy back to our office so that we can see that it was filled correctly. Because we've had several cases in which the pharmacist has gone ahead and filled the prescription, but at their own dosage levels. And unfortunately, in that situation, we had a dog that was on thyroid medication for several months that was not responding, and the owner was quite upset that the dog was not getting better. But after doing a little more investigation, finding that, indeed, the pharmacist had cut the dose by one-tenth.
Major difference. We're chatting right now with Dr. Ted Cohen. He is the current president of the American Veterinary Medical Association. We'll be right back after this short break. Please stay tuned.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
There's nothing more delicious and healthy than an old family recipe. And for over 50 years, our family's been creating them especially for your pets. Nutrisource Super Premium Pet Foods. Dog and cat food that's all natural, holistic, and organic. Nutrisource Pet Foods contain our patented Good for Life system for your pet's optimum health and well-being. So, order now. Safe quality food made by our family for your furry family members. Go to NutriSourcePetFoods.com.
From our family to yours, KLN Family Brands.
Listen, cat people, it's just litter. Until you realize those big boxes mean big smells, big messes, and big money. Switch to World's Best Cat Litter, the only litter with concentrated power. It guarantees less smells, less work, all with less litter. Try the small bag that lasts one cat 30 days and you'll realize it's just litter, unless it's World's Best Cat Litter. Find it at Target, Walmart, and at your local grocery and pet stores.
Calling all pet product manufacturers and pet experts. Let the public relations and marketing professionals at Whitegate PR get you featured in the news. I'm Dana Humphrey at Whitegate PR, and we have been specializing in pet product PR for over 10 years and can get your brand featured in the media, from TV to radio to print to blogs. You can find out more at www.whitegatepr.com.
This year, Americans are expected to spend a jaw-dropping $36 billion on their pets. From lighted leashes to high-end spa products, the discriminating pet owner can find just about anything to pamper his or her pet. Hi, this is Michelle Fern. Join me every week for Best Bets for Pets, where we'll talk about the latest pet products and talk to the companies that make them. Best Bets for Pets, every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Cohen, this is great information that you're giving listeners. I really appreciate it. And one of the things I think that's so important is we're talking about human medicine, veterinary medicine, the work that you've done at the zoo. And a passion that I have is an initiative called the One World, One Health, One Medicine. I know that's something that was important to you and you've written on. Could you tell us a little bit about what that is and how veterinary medicine plays into this one world?
I'm also quite interested and quite passionate about One Health. And to tell you where veterinarians fit is really pretty easy. Veterinarians are at the interface between human medicine, human health, I should say, animal health, and environmental health. And veterinarians are actually trained to deal with all of those. Many people think veterinarians don't know anything about human health. However, realize that every time you take your dog or your cat or your horse to the veterinarian, or the veterinarian comes to them, and they receive a vaccination against rabies, that is as much for the protection of the human population, if not more so, than it is for the animal. So we indeed are working with that. Another example, if your veterinarian asks you for you to bring in a stool sample for your dog or your cat to be tested, that is to look for worms, intestinal-type parasites, that indeed can cause problems in those pets. But moreover, they can cause significant, serious problems in people, particularly children. And so we are on the lookout for that sort of thing. So veterinarians really are at the forefront of One Health. We feel like we have great responsibilities in order to make this all work.
And right now, Ebola has been so much in the public's eye of hearing about the Ebola cases, West Africa now. It's just been tragic. And so many veterinarians have been involved with that. They're going, wait a minute, this is a human disease. Why are veterinarians being involved? And I, being an alumni of UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine, they are part of the PREDICT program, where John Amazit, a veterinarian, is helping to track, along with many, many other people, the spread of zoonotic diseases.
Yes, and I'm glad you said zoonotic diseases, because I was going to correct you and say, yes, Ebola is a human disease, but it primarily has been a disease of monkeys and other primates within Africa. And it does and has spread from those primates into the human population. That is the definition of a zoonotic disease, a disease that can spread from animals to people. And that the World Health Organization estimates that probably 75% of all emerging diseases are zoonotic in nature. Who better paired to help deal with that situation than veterinarians?
There is such that interface between humans and animals, and as we're moving into their territories, yes, they're coming in such close contact now, than more so than ever before.
Absolutely. And in fact, I was talking to a researcher not too long ago who's been doing research on E. coli food poisoning. And as you know, E. coli 0157 is a deadly disease in people. People get that from contaminated meats and other foodstuffs. And one of the things that we have found is that we can actually produce a vaccine for cattle to prevent the disease. Actually, it's not even a disease in the cattle. They just carry it. But we can actually prevent the carrying of E. coli 0157 in cattle at a very low price by vaccinating them, and that then prevents the disease from ever occurring in people. So something as simple as that.
So I think that really shows that, I know human medicine, they do it also, but it seems in my mind, maybe I'm prejudiced, that veterinary medicine is much more so a preventive forward-looking versus reactive. So before you get the disease, here, let's go ahead and do a vaccine. Or kind of going back into my introduction about dentistry of, you know, why am I getting my pet's teeth clean? Doing that preventive care before you need the root canal, before the tooth falls out. If you could kind of touch a little bit on that.
You bet. And I can talk about, let's talk about two things. Let's talk about the reason for prevention first, and then I'll talk more specifically about the dental aspect, if that's okay.
Perfect.
I think as far as prevention, the veterinary profession has not always been really, I think, as organized and as behind a preventative effort as we are now. That's something that has kind of come very gradually into our realization over the last 20 to 25 years. We used to wait until an animal is sick, and then we would deal with it. And as you said, that's a reactive form of medicine. Prevention works much better. It's much less expensive for the owner. It's much less of a problem for the animal. It gives them longer, happier, pain-free lives. And so prevention is certainly what we would all prefer to do for our animal friends. As far as dental problems, a lot of people have not had their pet's mouth checked. But I guarantee you that if you lift up the lip on your dog or your cat and take a smell, if it smells bad or if it looks bad, there's dental disease there. And we're not talking just about losing a tooth or needing to do a root canal or something of that nature. What we're talking about is that smell, that redness of the gums that you may see, has to do with bacteria that are living by the millions and millions in and around the teeth. What happens over time is that bacteria is absorbed into the body. It also produces toxins, and those toxins and that bacteria seed the systems within the body. It's one of the primary causes for heart disease, lung disease, and liver disease, and kidney disease, for that matter, in our pets. And so, if we can keep the mouth clean, if we can make sure that those teeth and gums are healthy, those animals lead a much longer, happier, and pain-free life.
And too many times, Dr. Cohen, people will say, well, how can these teeth be bad? You know, you cleaned the teeth for me 3 years ago, and I give them one of these dental chews that, you know, every day I give them one or two dental chews. And how can you tell me the teeth are bad and you're going to have to extract 13 teeth?
Well, I would ask that same person, how often do they go to the dentist and how often do they brush their teeth? I suspect that if they only brush their teeth once or twice a month, if they went to the dentist every 3 to 4 years, I suspect their mouth would be in a little different shape than it probably is today. On the other hand, we have to look at lifespans in animals. Animals live much shorter lives, and time passes much more quickly. A visit to the veterinarian once a year is equivalent to a human seeing their physician about every 2 to 3 years. And that's why we feel that's a pretty good time period, but that's about where we feel we need to be as far as trying to prevent any of these systemic diseases.
I think you've been listening to my office calls, exact same things that I'm saying too, so I'm glad we're on the same page. People, you know, listening to this going, root canals? You can do root canals on dogs? It's like, oh yes, dogs and cats, and you can have implants and caps. It just seems to show that veterinary medicine has become so specialized. Since you've graduated from Tuskegee 20-some-odd years ago, How have you seen specialization change in veterinary medicine?
Well, I've seen specialization go from basically being quite unusual outside of the veterinary colleges to a very common type of practice. And indeed, in most major metropolitan areas, there are numerous specialists. Veterinarians specialize in everything from neurology to dermatology to nephrology to dentistry to anything that a human veterinarian would do. Notice I said human veterinarian. So
they only wish they could be veterinarians, yes.
Well, you know, physicians are great folks. but they only have to take care of one species. We have to take care of a myriad of species, and it just makes our jobs a lot more interesting and a lot more challenging. But to get back a little bit on the topic, the other thing that has changed with specialization is the demand for better and better pet care. And it used to be that if a dog had a type of many types of cancers, which are quite common in dogs, unfortunately, it was a pretty much an automatic death sentence. Nowadays, people can go to cancer specialists, oncologists, and receive all sorts of treatments for their pets that can, again, give great quality of life for many, many years. And so that, the fact that people want more care for their animals is really driving specialization.
I think one of the things so important, because I totally agree with you, Dr. Cohn, with all the various specialties that are out there, oftentimes say, okay, I need you to go to a specialist. I've done as much as I can. We need to have a specialist. How am I going to afford this? Oh, do you have pet insurance? No. So I am a great proponent of pet insurance. There's so many different good companies that are out there. And I think that's really going to be a way to help promote preventive medicine, wellness, and that keep that human-animal bond going as long as possible.
I would agree with you 100%. I, too, am a great proponent for pet health insurance. And the main thing I would say is, again, talk to your veterinarian, take a look at all the different ins and outs, because every policy is a little different, every company is a little different. Some have advantages for certain types of pets with certain types of existing or pre-existing conditions. Others may be better in another way, maybe a little less expensive or something. But I think pet health insurance is a great way to be able to afford those large, unexpected bills.
I know you have to scoot. You have another appointment right after this interview. If there is one thing that pet owners should know about veterinarians that they don't, but you want them to know, what would that be?
Boy, that's a toughie. You know, I think our profession's pretty well known, but I'll tell you one little secret just about veterinarians in general, something that I've learned over many years, and that is veterinarians are mostly introverts. It's not always easy for us to reach out and to talk to people, even though you wouldn't think that was the case. So my suggestion, when you first go into the veterinary office, is to strike up a conversation and just make sure that you're asking all of those questions that you think you need to. In fact, I encourage my clients to write those questions down either before they come into the office or even as we are speaking in the office as I do my exam and we have our conversations.
Great information, Dr. Cohn. Thank you so much for being with us today. I've been chatting today with Dr. Ted Cohn, the current president of the American Veterinary Medical Association. Very much an honor to have you on my show. Thank you.
An honor and pleasure is all mine, Brittany. Thank you, and keep up all the great work.
Well, please listen again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz with The Pet Doctor. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.